Welcome to Podheim, Jarok's Valheim podcast. Let's give him the business.
Hey everybody, today is September 12th, 2023. I'm your host, Jarok the Viking, and joining me today are my fellow Vikings, Gwen the Shield Maiden.
Gwen the Maiden today. Hello.
Hello, Gwen the Maiden. We also have Shield Maiden Morning Darkness. And we also have Jules with the blue cap.
Smurf Jules.
Smurf Jules today.
Real Jules, non-digital, real-life yes. Jules.
After the last picture you showed of me on the podcast, I couldn't.
But you didn't like that stock photo of the jester that I found?
Yeah. Need to put one on top, you know. Thank you. Raise the stakes.
Awesome. Well, before we start getting into all of our stuff today, Morning Darkness, can you give us a preview of what we got to look forward to today?
Absolutely. So, Jarok has a review of a couple of different games, including Starfield, and he will gush over Baldur's Gate 3. And we also, Jarok has some new gaming servers, and some Valheim news is in store for you. There is an update with the Valheim Trial of Tyr, and the Valheim sneak peek of new armor.
Yeah, can't wait to talk about that stuff. But before we do, I just wanted to say that this episode is brought to you by Zydex Computers, of course. And there, I have one right there. I own one. I absolutely love it. Besides customizing a desktop PC or laptop to meet your exact needs, they also have a lifetime parts and labor warranty. Just visit jarokthevikin.com/Zydex and check out the sales and specials they have going on right now. So let's talk about our hats real quick. Let's start off with Smurf Jules first. Smurf Jules, did you find a sock in your drawer and stretch it out over your head, or what are we looking at here?
Oh, no, that's my actual foot size. So. No, that's an actual 12th century Smurf hat.
No, maybe. Phrygian Jules. I should have written this for you.
Gwen, you forgot to edit his script.
Yes, and it's made by the lovely Gwen the Sheepman, just for me.
Oh, so I guess we should ask Gwen. Gwen, what are we looking at on Jules' head?
Yeah, this is one of the two or three different types of hats that our reenactment society in the 12th century uses for men, because and this kind of ties into what I'm wearing as well, because in the 12th century in England, it's the Normans who have invaded. They're very, very Christian, and so part of their everyday attire, for modesty reasons, they would, men and women would cover their ears. And it's not even so much as you might think, you know, like the veil like this looks a lot like some veils that are worn in other religions to cover your hair. For the Normans, it's not so much about the hair as much as covering your ears, because the belief at the 12th century was that Mary got impregnated through her ears by the Holy Spirit. So they wanted to cover their ears, to cover their, you know, modesty and things, which is a kind of a fun little fact. That always makes people giggle. So men would also wear either a little cap or a hat of sorts. And we'll tell you why Jules has a 12th century hat in a bit, I guess.
Yeah. Because I also feel really safe now. Not getting impregnated.
Because I mean, it's, we're double safe. We've got the hat, we've got also the headphones. Like, we're good. We'll stay virgins forever. It's good.
Not getting pregnant. Yay.
Yeah.
Nice.
And the other thing as well that I wanted to point out is Jules. So I showed him the different styles of hats, and one of them is actually very similar to Viking hat that we have in the with the new Hilda's Request stuff, the kind of simple black, round cap. Mm-hmm. That was also a thing in the 12th century. So I gave him the options. The other option was to have like a hood, like the one I wear sometimes. And he decided that the Smurf hat looks funny and that he wants a Smurf hat that looks as Smurf as possible. So hence the color. And if you show, the lining is white as well. So you could even reverse it and actually have a white Smurf hat.
So
Gwen, actually, no, I'm the inverse Smurf.
Did they ever wear that kind of a hat for sun exposure, to protect against sun exposure too?
Yeah. Of course, that was part of it is, having a hat, it protects you from the cold, from the wind, from the rain, from the sun, from the elements. And given people lived mostly outdoors, especially people who were doing labor, then that was part of it. And to kind of transition to what I'm wearing.
Yeah,
what are you wearing? I decided to match Jules in his 12th century theme. And this is what we call a wimple, which is essentially a veil. This is all linen. And that would be what women in the 12th century used to cover their ears and their heads. There's different styles. So this is like the pretty basic style. You could actually wrap it around your head in different ways. And everyone has their own kind of style and whatnot. I've got like wimple pins. I'll get closer to show you, but pins, brass pins to hold them. You can get quite fancy with those pins. If you're rich, you can have pins that are decorated with pearls and jewelry and things like that. But I'll get closer just to show.
Yeah. I don't know if you can see.
Yeah, we can see definitely on that left side of the pin.
Yeah, so this is a wimple, which is essentially a veil. And there's different styles for the really fancy ladies. They started getting a bit more fashionable and had things that would cover the ears and head, but would kind of show the neck and stuff. Which is shocking. The style that's really nice and very common in the, especially a lot of sculptures and depictions of very famous like queens and so, stuff like that from the 12th century or nobles, is that often women would wear their hair really long and braided. And so you would have like those lovely braids that would kind of peek out of the veil and sometimes be, circled with like silk ribbons and stuff like that. And that was peak fashion. So that's why I'm growing out my hair. I'm trying to get to the point where I have those nice, nice long braids. And I didn't have time to do it today, but usually I would also braid my hair and wear them under the wimple, show a bit of hair. Ooh,
a bit
fashionable.
Your hair is pretty long. That's your hair, right? No, not extensions.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my hair. It's it's pretty. It's getting long now.
Oh yeah,
it is.
So you can
getting there.
You can do the thing where it hangs out and put ribbons and things on. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm getting there. And for those who love who are history nerds and are interested, Eleanor of Aquitaine, who was a French queen, married off to one of the English kings. She kind of made that fashion of the really long braids that were peeking out, and the barbette, which is the other style of veil where it's like just a strap under your chin that also covers the ears. And then the top veil is like almost oval shaped. And so it would only cover the hair, but you would the top of the head and the ears, and kind of be, you'd have that chin strap and then have the long hair and the neck kind of open. And that style, you can see it on her grave. Her grave has a beautiful kind of sculpture that shows like the really long hair, and the story is that she made that style fashionable in England. She brought the French fashion with her, and then all the ladies in the court had to have it. So
nice.
Some things don't change.
Well, yeah, famous people definitely set the fashion trends. Was it Kennedy? You know, one of our presidents who didn't wear a hat, which was common for the era. And then after that, the men stopped wearing hats. I mean, not me. I still wear all kinds of different hats out, but they stopped so much. Well, cool. Let's see.
About your very modern hat?
Yes.
We're jumping 900 years now into the 21st century.
Well, yeah. So this one, it says solid gold premium lager. since we'll be talking about ales. I wanted to wear this hat just because of the story behind it. It's just, you know, it's a one about being generous. And we go to a lot of festivals and sometimes beer festivals. And we pay to get into the beer festival. And, you know, it's like $40 or $50, $60, depending on the festival. And you just get to go around to all the vendors. I think this one we went to, it was in Reno, California. And they had probably 40 or 50 vendors. And you can't drink that much, obviously. So, you know, I'm always asking for a little tiny pour at each vendor. But as we're going around, everybody has a tip jar. So, you know, even though you pay to get in, there's a tip jar. You can drink as much as you want. You don't have to pay for the beer. But the servers have a tip jar. So I just got a whole bunch of ones and just went around and dropped, you know, dollar bills into the tip jars as we just kept circling around our samples. And yeah, at one of them, I dropped actually more than one, but this was the one that gave a hat. I dropped one in and the lady said, for being generous and tipping, here's a free hat. So it was it cost me $1, which I wasn't expecting. So be generous to the people serving you. You never know what you're going to get. It's obviously tipping is huge here in the US. Since we have two different countries over there, Gwen, how is tipping in the UK? Is that something that is common in certain places, or?
Yes and no, but I think, Jules can confirm, but most of Europe, including the UK, is tipping is like that bonus of appreciation. It's not a mandatory or expected thing, and a lot of restaurants, at least in the UK, have a service charge that is included in the bill. Mm. So it takes away that awkwardness of, you know, how much are you going to tip? But a lot of restaurants will have like a service charge that you can ask to remove, but that would be a bit of a faux pas, but you know, that's their way to deal with it. Also because a lot of people in the UK just pay everything by card. Like no one carries cash anymore.
Yeah.
So whenever you have to tip, it's always kind of awkward if you have to like ask them to add on top and things. And then you're never sure if the tip is going to the waiter or waitress that was attending to you, or if it's going to go just to the owners. So, usually it's like service charge. It's more of a thing probably for like food and, you know, restaurants and things like that. Than for like taxis, for example. I don't think most taxis don't really expect a tip if you can give them one, but they already charge you enough that probably don't need the tip on top. And then in bars, you always have, in bars and in pubs, you always have like the tip jar at the front. And I don't know if they do that in the US, but if you tip at the bar, they will ring a bell in most places.
At some places, it depends.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll sing or do like the person who sees the tip will cheer, and then the rest of the staff will do some kind of cheer. It just depends. Yeah. Everybody has a different way to acknowledge it.
Yeah, but yeah, I think in Europe, it's still very much like it's an appreciated thing, but it's not expected as much. Like people don't, there is minimum wages here and people don't depend on it as much. But yeah, Jules, what's your take on tipping?
In Germany, it's quite different. I always tip your waiters. And also cash is a lot more common in Germany. We always carry cash, and we always, or a lot of people pay cash still.
Mm.
I was a bit shocked that it's not the same in other countries. So,
there was probably more cash in the US before the pandemic, but after the pandemic, it's definitely going away. Like a lot of places we go to, they'll only accept credit. They won't even take cash.
And the waiters have the leverage of your food and drinks, and so tip your waiters, guys.
Well, yeah, especially if they're good at it. I like the idea of tipping. I don't know what you guys think of it, but I love the idea of tipping because I feel like there are too many jobs that actually don't have incentives built in. You know, so that if you work harder or you make more of an effort, you can earn more. And I think any service industry where like we can tip them, like I feel like the ones who really deserve the bigger tips, are working for it. And I love to give what I can extra to those people who are earning it. And so many other jobs, like I feel like services can be so terrible. Like for example, our DMV, the Department of Motor Vehicles, you know, most government related jobs are like the post office. You go in there and they just kind of treat you like you're not human. You know, like, yeah, go over there, get there.
It's a constant across the globe, apart from maybe in Japan. In Japan, I think the anywhere you go, the service is always great. But yeah, bureaucracy is always.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not always.
Pretty humble in Germany, too. So.
Mm. Yeah. So like if government jobs, like when I go into the DMV, I wish they had a little tip jar there so I could tip them so that they won't, you know, so that they can have I want them to have a nice day, earn a little extra income and don't be a jerk. Like we're all just here to get our business taken care of. So just because you have a government job and you can't earn tips and you can't get fired, there's no reason to be a jerk about it. But they're not all like that. It's just people having a bad day sometimes, you know, which, you know, be nice because you never know what people are going through in their life. They may seem rude to you sometimes, but there's probably a really good reason why. And if you're nice to them, despite them being rude, you might be able to be like that little one happy moment for their day. So something to consider. So let's see. What do we got to talk about here? Okay. So, we talked about our hats. Mm-hmm.
What have we been up to? So what have you been up to, Jirok? I know you always go last, but now I'm going to make you go first.
Oh, I was just going to ask you because I had your images ready and everything.
All right, fine.
Well, I can tell you one thing and then before we can come back to me. But I yesterday on 9/11, which is obviously, you know, not a very happy day in American history, but it's always been a great day for me. It's been a great day for me for 29 years because 29 years I raided a little village and found myself a shield maiden. Actually, we found each other and we celebrated our 29th anniversary yesterday. And
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Wow, congrats.
It seems like we went to dinner last night and there was this younger couple who was there celebrating. It was like it's called Kobe, Japan, Kobe, Japan, where they, you know, they cook the food right there in front of you. It's a really, really nice place. There's another family there with like a teenage son. They said, oh, it's his birthday.
Yeah.
And we said, well, it's on our anniversary. They asked, well, how long? And I said, well, 29 years. And they said, oh, it's only 4 for us. Wow, you look so young. I was like, yeah, we got married really, really young. we just got lucky that it lasted. So
that's awesome.
I don't recommend it. Get to know the people first. You know, I mean, most of the people I know who got married young, it didn't last. We just got lucky, but... So, Morning Darkness, why don't you tell us what you've been up to over I think it's been 3 weeks, so you've probably got a lot to share.
You know, it's funny. I've really been focusing on like one thing in Valheim, which has been building a library. And really, it's a library in the trees. So it's a tree library.
Of course.
We're getting to use a couple of mods. So we're using a quality of life mod. So it gives us basically the dev commands. So free building and all of that. And then we're also getting to use Gizmo and item stand all items. So if you look, I made a crystal dome.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. That looks like it took a long time.
It did. It took an embarrassingly long amount of time.
And the tower has a dome on it too. Mm-hmm. It looks like
that one a little bit faster because it's quite a bit smaller too. Yeah. And then that little like section off the tower is like the restricted book section. And so I finally got the walls and roof completed yesterday, and the build competition ends tonight at midnight for me.
Oh wow.
So I have 10 hours. I have one book in the library. I have 10 hours to finish the internals, decorate, get all the item stands, get all of the, I got plant everything is another mod that we're using. Get all of the vines put up on the walls and get all of the books put in and titled.
Wow. It looks beautiful. I love the, those semicircle, like it looks almost like a tree of life decoration that you've put in those on the wall.
Is 100% the goal. Yeah, if you go just to the one that actually has green on it. So if you go to the one to the left of the dome, that has the item stand, all items, seeds on it. Yeah.
Looks real nice. Even just with the wood, you can, I love the pattern. It looks really nice.
Well, thank you. You use the root trophy, right? To make the roots of the tree. That's really clever.
The abomination trophy. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I've been having fun with this build. It's taken all of my time and all of my attention. But in the middle of this competition, my family and I did go to Tahoe. A husband has extended family that happens to have a cabin, and it's on forestry land with a 100-year lease. And so, you know, distant family member bought the property in 1952, and she had a cabin built there. And so my family and I got to stay there, and my son had an absolutely delightful time. Oh, okay. We're going to talk about the bear. Okay.
That was the next picture.
So we went up with, it was my husband, my child, and my dog, and then my brother-in-law and his fiance joined us. And that's a new development, so I'm still excited about it. And I was going outside, and I'm you know, trying to carefully maneuver up the path with my cane and my dog and my toddler. And there's a one-lane road right in front of me, and on the other side of the one-lane road, so literally the distance of a single lane, there's a bear. And I'm like, oh, that's a bear. And I have a reactive dog and a toddler on my sides. And so my dog saw the bear and she started, you know, getting real, real angry and aggressive. And you know, but she doesn't pull.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Because my dog would have just dragged me to the other side of the road.
She didn't lunge. And if she had, I would have had to let her go, and it would have been absolutely heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But she didn't lunge and she didn't pull. And the bear looked at us, and my child was like, oh, hi, bear. But he still clung to my leg. He didn't try to approach the bear. He didn't try to do anything like that. And so both my child and my dog very intelligently stayed by my sides. And I'm sitting here going, okay, what am I going to have to do here? And then the bear just starts moving on again. I'm like, okay, all right. Ember, do you want to get in the car? She turns around and is like, cannot load up into the car fast enough. She was just like, nope, I'm done. I do not need to face large creature. Nope. And my husband comes out, and I'm like, hey, honey, you might want to get a picture of that bear.
That's just right over there.
That's right over there. Yeah. He was like, you know, he was like, oh. But yeah, so it was a very moment of, oh, bear, where bear? There bear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of bears up there. We took a boat out on the lake one day, Lake Tahoe. Mm. And when we came back, we were walking back through the parking lot right next to the lake. And everybody got in to the truck. And I was the last one to get in. And there was a bear right behind my truck, like 10 feet behind my truck. Like, oh, there was one of my passengers literally like stepped in, and it walked up right behind them, and it didn't see the, and I just kind of stopped, and I was like, should I jump in? And it just decided to climb a tree. Went up a tree. Then I got in and I said, "Hey, everybody, bear!" And then suddenly there were five cameras sticking out of my truck as everybody's recording the bear right behind my truck. and then they got out because it went up the tree, and I was like, "Once it starts coming down, you might want to get back in." But yeah, it came down and it wandered off. But they're all over the place up there.
All over the place.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a very intriguing moment for me to be like, I do not have the capacity to stand here much longer. What's the plan, Bear? So that, and you know, we took our kid mini golfing and we were right by, what is it? Emerald Bay. That's actually in this picture right here. And so my kid is tall enough that he can reach the thing. Now he can't point it down at the lake, but he's like, yee!
Can look up at the tree or the clouds.
Yep. And he was talking about the birds and the trees and, you know, he was very excited. Aww. So, and there's my husband helping him actually look down at the Viking house that's down on like a little island out there.
That's right.
Yeah.
Famous Viking house down there.
The famous Viking house, yeah. And then, this is just out in the backyard. We were right on, next to a creek. Mm-hmm. And so you could sit outside in the back and listen to the water and look up at the trees. And it was just such a serene moment for me.
Yeah, it's beautiful up there.
And yeah.
I think that's all of them.
Yeah.
Cool.
Nice.
And then, let's see, I've been playing some Palia. We actually did a cake party in Palia. My goodness, those things can be chaotic. But it's very fun. And I created a community called Famheim. So anyone who joins Palia, if you want to be part of a community, we do cake parties and we do other kinds of fun things together. And it's you know, it's a delightful thing. And then my child started preschool last week. So 3 days a week for like 3.5 hours, I have
a little bit of free time.
Free time, nap time, gaming time, content creation time. Mm-hmm. With a little bit of caveats, but that's a different story. And then I colored my hair blue again.
Yeah,
it looks lovely, as I told you
thank
before.
You. Yes, love, thank
love
you.
Love the color, love the style.
It's as it should be. And then, Jirak, I know you've been gushing about Baldur's Gate 3,
mm-hmm.
and I've been a little concerned as to whether or not my laptop could handle it and streaming, or even handle Baldur's Gate, because it's a very beefy game. But I'm part of this competition because one of the prizes is a $50 gift card for Steam.
Nice.
So I've been really like dedicated thinking, okay, maybe I can afford Baldur's Gate 3 if I win this competition. Well, one of my chat members gifted me Baldur's Gate 3.
Nice. Oh, that's so nice.
That's so nice.
So, Negu, a Danish member of my community, was like, here, just have this.
Oh, that's lovely.
So that was very
not
sweet.
A cheap game. So that's a really beautiful gift.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so awesome. I'm very excited. I will, as soon as the build competition is over and as soon as I'm not playing a particular closed beta that I got into last week.
Ooh, one that you can't talk about because of NDA.
I think we can say that we're in.
I'm playing Moria right now, and
I got accepted also.
Yay! We can play together.
Yeah, I know we can't talk to them or tell them anything, but we can.
Yes. I mean, you know, if you want to know about Baldur's Gate 3 or Baldur's Gate 3, Return to Moria. There are plenty of game reviews and trailers and all kinds of different things. So if you want to go check the game out, there are plenty of resources to go and learn some information and some very fun details in some of the playthroughs. They've got like a 10-minute playthrough that they recently posted. So
Yeah. Didn't they announce their release date just like a week or two ago?
October 24th.
Yeah, the release date's right around the corner, October 24th.
Right around the corner. There is not a long wait, and it is a survival crafting game where you play a dwarf trying to reclaim the Mines of Moria, and it is a 1-8 party survival crafting game, and it'll be very interesting. I can't even say anything else.
I know. Well, if we're allowed to set up servers for it, like if that's a thing we can do, then I'm really excited to set up a server in our Discord community.
I expect you'll be able to set up servers, and I've already been asking a couple people that I know that are in server creation communities to be like, so are you going to have a server that supports this game? Mm-hmm. And if you haven't even thought about it, you should.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a pretty amazing year for games. There's so many games I'm looking forward to, but then...
You know, it's almost like we had a pandemic that put everything on hold, and now all those projects are coming to fruition.
Right, because it takes a few years, right? So 2019, you know, now, and it's pretty awesome.
is the year for gaming, let me say.
Yeah. Yep, lots of games coming out this year. So lots have released already. I have a little bit of feedback to give on that here coming up. But Gwen and Jules, I guess we can kind of combine your recent events and tell us what's been going on over there.
Yeah. So before we do that, I actually talked about games, and I was playing Remnant 2.
Oh. Ooh, how is that?
Not as hyped as the other games, I guess, but it's it's a pretty good game. If you like Souls-like games and like,
pain,
like
pain. And frustration,
pain and frustration. Also, if you also like guns instead of swords and whatever they have in the Souls series, that's the game for you, because it's like a Souls-like with guns. Actually, we have a bit of melee combat, but the main focus is guns. And it's hard. It's has the core Souls-like elements where you just go in places, die, everybody respawns, and you try again until you get through it. Yeah. It's pretty nice. Remnant 2.
Yeah, it looks like that one came out in July, huh?
Yeah, it's probably a bit older.
Well, no, it's just like a month and a half old. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not that better fetish focused like you guys. So I've taken the polished guys, games. So,
well, yeah, I've tried a couple of polished games. I'll tell you about that here. Gwen, you were not alone in the UK. Right?
Ew, you had, a visitor.
You had some company?
Yes, I had a visitor. And we, the funny story
would
is
it happened
we kept
to be
it Smurf-like? Quiet. Yes. We kept it quiet just for the one on-stream joke that no one even noticed. And was such a... Good. Anyway. But yes, indeed, Jules came to visit. Hello, Amber. Jules came to visit, and of course I had to take him on a big tour of all that the south of England maybe has to offer. You know how a couple of weeks ago I said like, oh, my ideal holidays are basically visiting old stones and doing history based stuff. I'd kind of drag Jules into all of that. So, Jules, do you want to talk a little bit about some of the stuff that we got up to?
Jules, what are you wearing?
I'm wearing.
Is that your Smurf hat?
That's the actual Smurf hat as seen on this live stream. I got to take it back from the UK. That was a nice gift, as I said earlier, from Gwen. She made it herself. And I'm wearing some kit that... nice people landed me, so because I was part of the history reenactment show which Gwen does with her society, and I decided I want to join, and I got landed some kit nice 12th century kit and
nice.
To wear a cross, which is not what I would normally do, but it's all for the show. The show must go on.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a big bit big. The
tunic. Yeah, the you tunic, were kind of swimming in it a bit. But it was the like a hand was me a down, bit bigger, right?
Than me.
Yes. Yeah,
it was fine.
Yeah, so essentially I had a number of different shows all across the summer, and I've been talking about it pretty much on every Podheim, but there was this one day show and I was like, well, it could be a fun one to join in because it was just one day. It wasn't too kind of high stakes or anything. Hey, you're giving spoilers. No. So I asked Jules if you wanted to come along, and then if he also would be willing to take part in it, as in dress up and everything. And he was very, actually, surprisingly enthusiastic about that part. So I asked, there's a couple of things that I made, like the hat and other bits and pieces. And then I asked some friends to lend a couple of things, and here we are. A Jules in kit, and here you can see we took these pictures at the end of the show. It was after the combat piece, so I'm wearing my male impression, the male kit, as opposed to female kit. That's why I don't have my wimple on, but I've got my hood on. I was dressed as a peasant basically for the combat piece, and we even got Jules to participate in one of the what we call a Shire Court. So during the show, of course, we've got, as you see in the back, we've got like our encampment, and people, members of the public, can see all the different crafts that we do when we kind of talk through it and stuff like that. But usually throughout the day, we've got a couple of set pieces. So there's always like a combat piece, and then there's one that we call the Shire Court, which is a display of how justice would have been dispensed in the 12th century. So you would get like the local noble, who is the person who basically does the justice bit. So kind of a church setting up a tribunal. You get like a jury, which is like townspeople, some nobles, and etc. And then you get like the guards bring the accused. And it's always interesting because you get different types of court cases, and we do it based on existing real court documented court cases, and just to show the public like the kind of disputes that people had to deal with in the 12th century and how the justice system works. And it's always a fun one, and often it's things stuff. Like yeah, it's like land disputes, that kind of thing. I mean, like nothing too some new.
some child eating and stuff. So.
Yeah. So there's one court case that, again, inspired by a real one, that is quite a goofy one that we like to do and the kids usually love, which is the baby eating giant case, which is often...
Guess who was it?
And guess who was the baby eating German? I mean, giant. So we got Jules to participate as the accused, and the premise of this court case is it's often so it's based on the real one, and it's often basically just to show that how people would be ostracized for either having certain beliefs or for not belonging, and oftentimes we try to do this court case with either someone who often someone who's like speaks a foreign language. So the villagers kind of decide that they don't quite like this foreigner, and they basically claim that that person eats babies and misses church and all sorts of heretic things, and that's kind of a way to get rid of them or get them to kind of leave the town. So because we often do it with foreign languages, we thought, hey, we've got a German with us today. Let's do a baby eating German. That was quite fun.
It was, yes. I got to speak German. Nobody could understand me. I could say whatever I wanted. That was nice.
Yes.
Are there other?
And Jirok, you said something, but you were muted.
Yeah. Are there other pictures I should pull up here? I don't know. They're not labeled, so it's just kind of random which one I click on.
Yes, Jules. Comment on
what is this beautiful Jules? Castle.
Yeah, you do the show and tell for once.
This is old stones we visited, so that's Yeah, it's a castle in, it's not Portsmouth, it's a Portchester castle.
Yes. Well remembered. So,
and there's a thing in Gwen's reenactment group. You probably told about it before, where you capture castles for your local chapter. So, and we went on a capture castle spree, actually, Castle Rush, as I called it.
I heard you visited a lot of castles. How many were there total that you visited?
It was like 10 castles in, I don't know, 3 days, was it?
Oh, wow.
Or maybe, but it was.
We went a bit overboard.
Oh, there's one of the castles.
There's another one there. You have to say the area we stayed in near Wales, Wales English border. I had like, I don't know, 5 or 6 castles in like 1 mile vicinity. So, or maybe like 5 or 10 miles, whatever. But there.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh, that is such a great photo. I love this photo.
Ridiculous picture. Okay, so just the one before to explain the castle capture thing. So as I've mentioned before, and you've probably seen in the back, I've got this shield that I'm holding. It has the heraldry of my local group within my reenactment society. And I also have a polo shirt that t-shirt that I'm wearing there with the logo for it, the same heraldry. And I also have this mini shield that I usually carry around. The one that Jules is holding, which is my castle capture shield. And the more different things you have, the more points you get. So if another group tries to capture the same castle the same day, you kind of do it based on the total of points. But anyway, it was the end of the day. There was no chance of anyone else capturing it. But I just thought it was funny that we had just so much heraldry in one picture and also an axe. So I think this was like the third of castles that we visited in 2 hours. Well, visited, passed through in 2 hours at the end of a long forging day where we forged the axe that I'm holding. So we were a little bit tired and crazy at that point.
Oh, I want to hear about that story. What is that?
Yeah.
Is
that the second picture? Yeah. Jules, go and talk about
what's going on
making
here.
Process.
Well, yeah, that's for those who see it, it's pretty obvious. We went to a forge. Gwen actually knows somebody, so that was pretty nice. And she knew that guy that helped us make the axe, which is he was a bit afraid because it's normally a 2-day endeavor, but we wanted to do it in 1 day and also capture some castles with it. So we had to be quick, but it was the two of us. So we came there and forged an actual exit.
And that's right there, the one you made?
Yes.
And all you can see the anvils in the background there?
Uh-huh. Yeah, so it's... Yeah, so it was a wood cutting axe because Jules wanted an axe to cut wood at home. And we made it in a day. It is true. It takes a while to forge an axe and an axe head. It's not the easiest thing to forge. Mm-hmm. And so they recommended, two people, if we wanted to do it in a day, 2 people was probably good. And we could see why, because there was a lot of someone needs a hammer, someone needs to hold the thing and another tool. So you definitely needed 2 people to do it.
Or 3 hands or something like that.
or 4 hands somehow. but yeah, it was really fun. I've always wanted to. So it's not my first time at this forge. Actually, this forge is where my whole reenactment journey started. And the person that Jules is talking about who works at that forge, but is also part of my reenactment society, is the one who basically told me about reenactment, and that's how I got into it. So that was a nice little trip back to the sources of my nerdiness. Last time I forged a little knife. It's not a sharp knife, but a knife type thing, and a couple arrowheads and things like that. Not really things that I could use much. And then after that, I got into reenactment and I was like, oh, I want to go back and try to forge something, a bit more practical or a weapon or something. So we had a great opportunity to do that. And Jules has an axe now. And actually, I think it's here. I can pull it up, maybe.
Yeah,
as you talk through more of the process, I don't know.
Oh, you, you have his axe?
because problem is getting back in.
But they wouldn't let you bring it on the plane? Wait, here, let me zoom in on you, Gwen. Oh, there it is.
I wouldn't press my luck on this.
Oh, so you got to have to ship it to him or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, we decided that it was not worth the risk of, because it is a sharp axe. We decided it wasn't worth the risk of trying to explain this to security. If didn't have you only had a carry-on luggage, so that was not really an option. So this is what I need to find a way to ship to Germany now.
Can you flip it over to the other side?
Yes. Did you notice the nice stamped?
Jules.
Exactly.
Jules. Just the jewels, actually.
Just the jewels, exactly.
Just the jewels.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
But it's really nice. It's you can see it does look really properly hand forged, which is cool. I was so excited. I was so proud. it has character. It definitely does.
Yeah,
you can see it on the pictures that we took for the capture the castle.
Oh yeah, exactly. So we got carried away after making this. We're like, we need to now capture all these castles. With the shield and the axe for reasons. You know, like kids when they have a new bag or something and they show it off everywhere. That was us with our axe.
So it looks like we've got a couple of other pictures here too. What are we looking at here? Crown jewels. Yeah, so is that your
guy? You always wanted to know how to. Yes, you always want to know to handle my crown jewels. So now you know.
Hey, well, here's the guide right here.
So part of
6 pounds.
For context, this is the crown jewels that are in the Tower of London, and we didn't visit the Tower of London, but the I think Jules got amused by the.
That might be a bit funny. I don't know.
And yes. What are we looking at here?
Theo with a hat.
Yeah, it's like a very expensive hat back in the day, so I got to wear it for a second.
What is this location?
It's the Porchester inside the big castle that you have a picture of from the outside. That castle has a ton of history. It was used as a prison in the 17th century, I think. And it used to be also at the time where France and England were always at war. All the prisoners of war would be kept in that particular castle. And it was to the point where they had so many French prisoners that they had almost French quarters within the castle. And they apparently had theater and stuff like that, theater productions that they were doing. I think that's what I understood from the reading really quickly through all the stuff as we were visiting. But I mostly found it funny to see Jules with another jester-like hat. So,
yes, very
told
cool.
Told you I'm serious about that competition.
Awesome. Let's see what else we got. Oh, this must be another forge picture.
Hammer on. Yes.
Yeah. You kind of scrambled the timeline on this, but yeah.
Yeah, they got loaded randomly. So you obviously use this hammer to shape the axe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Well, you use tools, right? We had tools that helped shape. So you would hit on the hammer with the tool that would then
shape the metal. Shape the accent. Huh? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't the biggest hammer they had. That was just what did he say?
What's safe for normal people to use?
Yeah, safe for normal people. They also had a really big one, 20 kilos?
I don't know, something I couldn't even lift.
It was.
And what is this? Royal Oak. Welcome to the Royal Oak. Oldest bar in England.
Yes.
Dates back to 1002.
Yes.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of places, because I did some research, some fact checking on this, and a lot of places in England claim to be the oldest pub or the oldest inn and the oldest that. But we just stumbled upon. So we went and visited Winchester, which is a lovely city that is one of the oldest and used to be the capital of England at the time the Anglo-Saxons were, so in the 9th century, 9th, 10th century, before the Danes invaded and made York the capital of their kind of Danish England, and before the Normans and others came after and made London the capital. So Winchester has a ton of history, and it's a beautiful town to or city to walk through. You get history at every corner. And we were just looking for a pub to have like some nice pub food. Mm-hmm. And we saw this one and was like, oh, well, yeah, let's carry on with our history theme. And we ended up eating in this room that was apparently they do loads of ghost tours in that pub because it's so old. And the room that we were in, which was covered in wooden panels and things, was apparently the haunted room where they have seen the most apparitions or whatever. So we're like, okay, we didn't see any ghosts, but yeah.
Aww.
Hi, Amber.
Doggy.
Yes. Oh, love the scratches. Oh, oh, we're getting an ad break now. Oh, there we go. Doggy break.
Aww.
Just scratch.
He's so cute.
This is the doggy that saw the bear.
Uh-huh.
Cool. Oh yeah, did you want to tell us about this this picture here, Gwen, that we have?
Ah, Gwen, please go on.
Yeah, just a name and that's shame. Your time so to shine. Of course the German guy comes to England and you would think, oh, well, maybe he'll be interested in trying all the different ales and things England has to offer. And what does he do? The Bavarian guy goes and orders Bavarian beer.
I needed one break from the pale ale and the stout and the ale and all the stuff. So,
uh-huh. Right.
Had to get one Hofmeister for the Bavarian Helles Lager, which is apparently now UK owned company. So it's technically not very Bavarian anymore. So
I can read what it says on the cup. It says imported Bavarian Helles Lager. So
yeah, they can write on the cup what they want. So
that is true. So what was your, because I'm not a beer person at all, but for those who like beer and might be interested, what's your take on English beers and ales? What did you think?
Well, so as a Bavarian, it's okay. It's a good crafted beer, and the stouts and the ales, the normal ales, you can drink them. It's not too bad. The pale ale was very horrible, actually, and yeah, because I think the problem is they don't have the Reinheitsgebot, as we call it, where you declare that the beer only has to be water, or hop, and malt. So yeah, maybe they punch is very German. Maybe they put in other stuff that it's not. Yeah,
doesn't make it real beer.
Yeah, yeah. It's not real beer, but it's nice.
I've had a tea beer before. That was really good.
It was an
Earl Grey infused tea, Belgian blonde, and it was probably the best beer I've ever had in my life.
So it's caffeine and alcohol.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. With like citrus. Yeah. And good. Yeah, no, it was so good.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
Well, one observation that I think we can make about some of the, especially the ales and the stouts, it's that they're just so thick. Those things are not drinks. They're meals. They're entire meals in a cup.
That's why they call it liquid bread.
Yeah, exactly. They're like nutrition. As
well. Yeah, and actually, from the 12th century, I got a bit into reading the brewing process of the 12th century. Now that I'm officially a Smurf member of the reenactment group of Gwen. And yes, back then it was actually part of the meals, firstly. So everyone did it. It was a part of the diet back then. And it was way, way thicker than we have it now because they didn't have the modern techniques
to
conserve that stuff. And well, if I'm very, very eager to brew a beer in the 12th century style. And dig out.
Well, and you'll learn quickly why they don't do it like that anymore.
Yeah, so probably that might be a bit not so good.
Well,
yeah, but another other fun history fact, for a long time, even up to the Victorian ages, it was safer to drink beer than drink water, because to make beer, you would boil the water and it would go through a process that would basically get rid of a lot of the bacteria, where drinking water from the river when before the time they actually had like sanitation in place, not recommended. So actually even children had beer and ales and stuff like that, and it was also nutrition. So for the poorer people who couldn't really afford meals every day, then they drank ale. So
stay hydrated, get some calories, and have a buzz all day long.
You had to work a lot, so.
Well, I wanted to say, if you ever come to the U.S., I'll show you what real good craft beer tastes like. We have the best variety in the U.S. I went to Germany. Their beer is okay. Like, it's fine. I was in the U.K. Okay, like, the beer's fine. But we have so many craft beers and IPAs and all kinds of things here that you just cannot, they just don't have over there.
Sounds horrible.
Oh, it's amazing. Well, that's the thing. There's such a wide variety. One beer you'll hate, and then another beer you'll think, this is like the second coming of Jesus. How do I get this? How do I get this beer shipped to Germany? let's see. So what have I been up to? Obviously, I had my anniversary, but I don't know. You guys have probably been too busy with summer activities to notice, but I've been recording a lot of my videos lately like this. Let me show you.
Dun, dun, ta-da-dum, dun.
Yep.
We see eyes, real eyes.
I have eyes.
I was going to say, so we've revealed your eyes on these other videos.
Yep. I thought maybe I'd reveal them sooner, but there was so much to talk about. It took us a while to get here. Well, two reasons that I decided to do it. One is, I wanted to record myself playing more games, and it's annoying to look at the screen through the sunglasses. And like, I feel like my eyes are straining all the time, even though I have my monitor turned up to max. But in filmmaking, when you learn cinema and storytelling, it's all told through the eyes, right? Like the character's eyes, like the expression, like you may get the face to emote a certain way, but when you see, that's why they call it the windows to the soul, right? Because you see what the eyes are doing and you really connect. When you look at somebody, you know, after whatever, you know, superficial glance you get of their bodies, you're always looking at the eyes, right? It's how we communicate. And it's interesting. They say, like, when you watch, one of the reasons why TVs and movies and shows are so powerful is because you get to stare at somebody's eyes without them knowing. Like when you're out in public, if you're staring at somebody and they kind of glance your way, it feels rude to continue that, right? You might look away. But when you're watching TV or movies, you get to stare at their eyes and fully, you know, like you're peeping on them, like you're looking into their life, even though, you know, it's a fabricated story, or maybe it's a documentary and it's real, but they can never look at you and catch you looking at them. And then you feel like you have to look away. So there's this really interesting interaction that we get because of TV and movies. And so, yep, it was time to show the eyes and grab people's attention and draw them in. I mean, how can you resist those baby blues?
Exactly. did you do that clap, Jules?
Yeah.
Yes, you did.
Well, Jules decided to come on camera, so I had to reveal my eyes. Can't let them show me up.
They have reveals.
Oh, you're muted, Jules.
Double reveal. Nice. Thank you.
So I've been, I just wanted to talk about Baldur's Gate a little bit. I want to gush about it because any of you who haven't, I have this thing about video games that I hate cutscenes because it takes control of your character away from you. And I don't want that. If the NPC wants to talk to me, that's fine. I want to run around and do my thing as I listen. I don't want my character taking control of. And I hate games where you look down on them. I mean, I used to play them back in the day because that's what most games were. But now games are like first person or that third person just right in front of you, not this top down. And I have not played a top down or role playing game in so long. But when Baldur's Gate 3 came out, I had to try it. And oh my goodness, the way they do it, it's one of the most entertaining video games I have ever played. And you can play it co-op too, so you can do that.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I'd love to play with you guys if you guys wanted to try Baldur's Gate. I think it would be so much fun to play co-op. And I'm slowly gearing up for more and more Baldur's Gate videos because I think the game's going to be around for a long time, mainly just because every thing you do in the game, whether you talk to an NPC or you take an action, it affects the world. Like, things actually change and the characters actually change. It's not like a lot of most role-playing games, it seems like they have an end point for each little storyline or quest that you have to get to. And you may kind of go like, you know, this on the way there, but you always end up at the same place. And with Baldur's Gate 3, your choices actually make a huge difference in the story and the way characters respond to you. I mean, who survives the moment? And so you can replay the game, make a different decision, and see a totally different, outcome. And there's three acts in this game. I have not gotten past the first one because I've made five characters to go back through the first act again and again. It's just so much fun. Plus, you know, I'm looking for content to make videos for, but yeah. And then making different decisions each time is just, it's so entertaining. I can't say enough good things about it. I mean, I don't have to, you know, really talk it up. It's the only other game on Steam has more players per day is Counter-Strike, which is, you know, always been about 1 million players per day. And this game is sitting at like 600,000-700,000 players per day still. It's already proving that it's good and probably the game of the year, at least for the games I've played. Now, to counter that, I also tried a huge AAA game. And let me just show you a quick picture of the video. This is the thumbnail for the video that I did for this game.
Oh.
It'll tell you the subject. It'll tell you what my review of the game was like. There you go. The thumbnail says, Starfield, it's terrible. And then little words, for me, it's terrible for me.
I am so, so sorry that has been yours.
I am also a bit sad for you because I know you were so excited about the game and
and
waiting for it for a long time.
Yeah, I just quickly, I did a video, in this video, I talk about my experience with the game, why I think it's bad. I kind of go through everything, but I also, I spent $400 to play this game, and I talk about that a little bit because I bought the collector's edition for $300. That didn't get me in on the day that it started early access, so I paid another $100 to get another code. Played it that night, refunded it. The watch that came with the collector's edition didn't work. So
oh no.
I took it back to the store and got a refund on that too. So my hands are clean. No more Starfield.
If you got some of your money back, at least it makes it less bad, but still disappointing.
Yeah. I did recently because there's a lot of problems. And for me, I think for everybody, just people are not willing to admit it because they like other parts of the game. But the interface for me, I think, is the terrible. It's one of the most terrible interfaces ever. And so I made this video. It's like just under 2 minutes. It says Star Fixer. I can fix it. And I just give you a little preview. Let's see if I have it here. This one. So I fixed Starfield. This is the first image you see. And yeah, so I go in and I talk about, this is the angry character. You can, you'll understand the toast reference when you watch the video, but I go through the video and I start fixing it, removing things that I think are terrible and changing it. And by the end of the video, I've got all this funny stuff. Yeah, see, it's only a minute 39. So check that out. It's a funny little inspiration I had to sort of say how the game I think is bad, but also to have a little fun with it. Like, obviously I'm making some jokes here because I just keep talking about how stupid it is. There's a spot in here where I say it probably even has a stupid inventory, and look, everything in the inventory is stupid. I changed the words, so everything is stupid. But it was a fun little video to make, just in good fun, but really, It's also serious too, because I think that my changes would actually help to improve that portion of the game. There's a lot of other things the game does wrong, in my opinion, for me. But anyways, there are people enjoying it. I hope you continue to enjoy it. But there are a lot of people who don't like it too. This game is apparently, from what I hear, has had a lot of refunds, not just my $400 in refunds, but a lot of other people have refunded. I heard, so I don't know that this is true, but I read somewhere that it's the most refunded game on Steam. It's also the biggest selling game on Steam ever. So, like, you would expect the game with the most sales to have the most refunds, because every game probably has a certain percentage of refunds. I don't know, but
maybe, but
yeah, so that's unfortunate.
Two extremes then. Yes. Loving Baldur's Gate but hating Starfield.
Yeah, I mean, not every game is for everybody, but
at least did you play Baldur's Gate?
Yeah, exactly. One and two is not too bad. Did you play Starfield before Baldur's Gate?
No, Baldur's Gate. Actually, so what I heard is Baldur's Gate release was supposed to be the same day as Starfield, but because of that, they moved it up a whole month. So they, instead of that extra month of development that they and release that they had planned into their, you know, schedule, somehow they managed to push it up a whole month and get it out there. And so glad they did, because I don't want it overshadowed by that terrible game.
I was wondering, was it just, did it feel so bad because you kind of compared it to this other game that you really enjoyed? And did that also affect, you know, people's appreciation for Starfield?
Well, there are some elements, yes. I mean, there are elements from other video games, which I like. Everything is sort of an evolution. Like, I like to go back to filmmaking because I'm a filmmaker 25 years. So it's like, we don't tell stories like we did 50 years ago, because we've learned how sophisticated the audience is, and like what we can now do and still tell a good story, but even in a way that's even more exciting or more emotional or draws the audience viewer in. The techniques of filmmaking have improved. And so with video games, the techniques of making a video game have improved. The interfaces have improved, the storytelling and all that. And it feels like Bethesda with Starfield stayed 20 years ago. They did not update it with the modern ways, like the modern interfaces. Like in my video, I talk about this bullet point. Like, imagine you have an inventory in Valheim, and instead of a container where you can pull stuff out and put into other containers, you have a bullet list, and you have to open the bullet list and you activate something, and then it equips it or puts it in your hot slot, which you have to go through menu systems to do. You can't just grab stuff and organize your inventory the way you want or put it into your hot bar the way you want. It's like this bullet point system. And it's like these antiquated systems with the storytelling too. And so, yeah, with Baldur's Gate specifically, their storytelling is so cinematic. When you get into a cutscene or you're talking to an NPC, it's very cinematic. It's like you're shooting over the shoulder, doing two shots, showing action, and the NPCs are very animated and excited. And I don't know if they'd used motion capture or what, but Starfield is like this. They're NPCs. Hi, how are you today? Welcome to the year 2023, and you're in the Starfield. Explore the 1,000 planets that we have.
It's
It is so, you know, it's so, so bad in my
opinion. It's a Bethesda game, right?
Yes, and I don't understand. It's like, imagine something that you like, but it's really painful, but you still like it regardless of how painful it is. Like, I feel like that's the fans of this game, is like there are good things that they like and they suffer through the pain to experience the good stuff.
But they always had the NPCs like this in Oblivion and the other.
But like, why do it so poorly? Like, Baldur's Gate.
Maybe it's a running gag by now.
Yeah, maybe it's a joke. I actually, that's what it feels like when I'm reading the reviews and watching the videos. I feel like, am I in the Twilight Zone? Am I being punked? like, why is everybody saying how good this game is? This isn't real. Wake up from my nightmare, because this just doesn't feel real. anyways, enough about that. I already made a video on it, and watch my fixing video. It's under 2 minutes. It's kind of funny. I mean, I think it was funny, but. Let's talk about a little bit about Valheim, actually. So still looking at putting out my season 5 server. Gwen, how are you guys doing on season 4? Are you guys almost done killing all the bosses, or where are you guys at? What boss do you still have yet to do?
Well, we finished the Hilda's Request, as in we did all 3 dungeons, I believe.
Okay,
good. We didn't quite retrieve all the clothing stuff that came with it.
We did the most elaborate tower first, and now we got all the fancy attire already.
Yeah.
So we don't need the peasant clothes anymore. So, but we did it anyway.
The wrong way around. Yeah, we started with the steel tower, and then we did the other two. But also, did we defeat Murda?
Yeah, be this someone.
I don't know. I was half asleep. So while George was visiting, we obviously were really busy. Did a lot of visiting and touring and stuff. And we had one of the stops was actually at my place, and we streamed together in the same room. And that was a whole thing of we didn't tell anyone, and we made the joke on stream, and that he was passing me meads through the side here.
I thought that was just a friend of yours, because I saw you cheers somebody and somebody hand you a bottle.
Yes,
I thought you just told Jules.
That was supposed to be the whole joke.
You should have had Jules pop his head in at the last moment.
He did.
We prepared it.
Oh, okay.
We prepared it for months, and we said in game, oh, Jules, would you pass me the mead? And I was like, oh, do you mean in game or in real life? And Ben was like, oh, in real life, please. And I was handing it to her, and yeah.
Terrible joke, poorly executed, and no one noticed. So all of that, like us being quiet, not like saying anything about this trip and stuff, was all for nothing. But yeah, we did this stream together, and I think I was just so tired from all the castle conquering. Towards the end, I was literally falling asleep just after we did Modo or something. I was falling asleep on stream. So really embarrassing, but hey, happens, I guess. So yeah, I can't remember if we even killed Modo or not.
Arkendorn.
Oh, okay. So, cool, they did all the work, and yeah. So then I guess we only have Yagleth left. And oh no, the queen.
Well, not exactly sure when I'll launch season 5, but I have started formulating things for it. So we'll see if you guys finish before I'm ready to launch it. But
hop to it.
In addition to that, so my admin Kondo from Australia, he's been working really hard on my modded server, which is called Jotun Quest. If you want, you can download the mod pack from Thunderstore. It won't have our custom settings, but at least you'll have the mods and you can try. But if it has, you know, new monsters, new bosses, new weapons, new armor, there's jewel socketing, it has a whole bunch of cool things. But actually, one of the funnest new things that they added to it, and I got to make a video about this soon, is it has airships. No, it's just really cool.
Monster ones.
Just big, like they're made out of hides, and you fill them with air, and they fly up.
Steampunky ones.
Is this a meat monster mod?
Well, there is a mod that has like a very steampunk type of airship, but at least some of the ones in this other mod that we're using has some that feel at least like they fit the Valheim magical realm and less steampunk. And I don't know. It was so cool. Kondo showed me, he was up in the sky and he was just slowly floating along. And I thought, wow, that actually kind of feels like it fits Valheim. And it's a neat way to get up into the sky and move around. It's not like super fast or anything, but yeah. So check that out. You can, like I said, you can download the mod pack or, you know, you can come over to our server and check it out. Let's see. So I also, you know, I have a 7 days to die server, custom areas that we built up for all kinds of things. So if you're just playing single player, you might as well check out ours. And the details for all these servers are on my Discord. I'll give you the link here soon. I have a Minecraft server where you can protect the areas where you build with claims, like a land claim to protect that area so people can't mess with your builds. And then a new server I launched is for my favorite space game of all time. It's called Empyrean Galactic Survival. And this is the game that I wish, I wish Starfield had looked at some of the other great space games out there, like No Man's Sky and Empyrean Galactic Survival and some of the other games that are doing role-playing elements well, and you know, learned from that. But Empyrean Galactic Survival is amazing. It's basically Valheim, except when you build up enough stuff, you can make a spaceship and fly into the sky and then visit hundreds of moons and planets and solar systems. It's just amazing. You'd start picking up, you know, basic materials and you build a base and then you build a vehicle to fly around the planet in. Then you eventually build a spaceship and go into space and you can combat with enemies and take over their ships. You can take over their space stations. I remember flying up into space and eventually finding a space station, and I took it over and I made it my own, like a whole space station. It's an amazing game. I wish it were bigger than it is, but
yeah, that's actually a game that was recommended to me.
It's so good. So I got a server up now, so maybe that'll encourage some people to give it a try. Just don't mess with my base. I got a little base. I dig a hole. I dig a hole into a mountain because it has full terrain manipulation too. So I dig a hole into a mountain and then I set up my base there. It's a little easier when the aliens come raiding to protect it if your base is in a mountain. but I'm looking at making another server. So if you guys in the comments, please let me know what game you'd love to see a server for right now. Obviously, as games come out, like Mines of Moria or other games, I can consider servers for those too. But one I'm considering now, because it has such a big, the dev team continuously updates it, is Conan Exiles. Still has a pretty good audience. So, and I love that game. I probably have about 1600 or 1700 hours in that game. So might see that. And if you want to play on my servers, yeah, you can get the login information for any of my servers. Just head over to my Discord, and that's discord.gg/JurokTheViking, or you can go to my website, JurokTheViking.com. Or if you don't want to play on my servers and you want to get your own server, you can get a gportal gaming server and save 10% if you use my link, JurokTheViking.com/gportal. Right. So next we're going to talk about the Trial of Tyr. So Morning, have you considered trying it?
Me? No, I do not have that skill set. I do not have the ability to game like that for many reasons. But I have been watching a number of trials, and I saw one guy, he's just doing the run over and over successfully and cutting down on his time.
Oh.
So he finished it at 19 hours and then did another run and got it down to 17 hours. And then last night, I think he killed the queen at 14 hours. I believe the current top time is something around 13 hours.
Mm. Do you know who that is?
I don't know who the 13 hour one is. Okay. but I've been watching another guy. He's on attempt 56 and still hasn't defeated the queen. Another guy is at like attempt 78 and can't get past the mountains. And it's brutal. It's a brutal run. I am seeing that the current meta is that the most successful stream starting soon.
I don't know why that came up. That was weird.
The most successful meta weapons choice is bows. And it's just, it's a very interesting thing. And then I know that Valheim recently released not only the first place prize, but they're also, look at that. They've got a second and a third place. So first place, you get that engraved special mug and a bunch of beautiful gear and merch. And then second and third place, you still get some pretty cool looking merch. You get that hammer necklace, a sweatshirt, a shirt, a mouse pad, the big one, you know, so it's real interesting. And I will say that those who are doing the Trial of Tyr and streaming it on Twitch, you know, usually when you stream, having a chat to also interact and communicate with is really distracting. And so the fact that this guy is at 14 hours while streaming it on Twitch, I am extremely impressed by, and he's getting 100+ viewers every stream.
Wow.
So it, you know, if for anyone who is looking to do the Trial of Tyr, who is looking to get, you know, those higher viewer numbers, Trial of Tyr is getting people's attentions. And so if you're good at it, you'll have even more attention. But it is very interesting because a lot of the speedrun techniques don't work.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because a lot
of because they do a lot of exploits, right? To do their speedruns, you can't use those.
No. One of the exploits is the death buff, where if you go into the mountains and you've died, you can use the corpse run heal to keep you alive versus the frost. So you can't do that here because it's a permadeath. If you die, you're done. Mm. So you got to figure out the appropriate balance of gear versus speed versus effort. And it's been very impressive. It's been very, very impressive.
Yeah, for some reason, I thought it was hardcore mode, but they say hard mode here on their thing.
Yes.
But it does say next to that, without dying and as fast as possible. So it's that hardcore is the without dying part, right? Like, because you can finish it quickly, but yeah, if you die, then your run's over. And I brought this page up because this is our friend Tolkis. Uh-huh. Who goes by Mordred Le Fay or at Eisenwolf Tolkis on YouTube. And he has three attempts already. And 5.5 hours, 3 hours, and 6.5 hours. This one he streamed just 6 hours ago before we recorded the podcast. So I don't know the outcome of this one, but obviously the first two, I think he got killed.
Yep. Like,
can you imagine you play for all those hours and then you die and then you're like, oh, amazing. No.
It is. I will say that the Trial of Tyr is a great teacher of releasing attachment.
Yeah.
All right. It's the speedrunner Spain, huh?
Yeah.
Every speedrunner Spain. And some games are quicker, some games are like hours and hours. You just waste
it. So I am very impressed by the attention that this trial has done. And it is great for Valheim. It's great for the people making the content for this. And the deadline is coming up. You have 1 week left.
Yeah. I'm trying to find a window of 15 hours where I could try this. But it sounds like I need to do it in less than 12 or 13 hours if I want to
compete? If I recall, Smith A was saying that he doesn't believe that anyone can do it in under 13 hours. Mm. So 13 hours is your goal.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. It'd be so frustrating to get to the last boss.
Between 13 and 14, I think, for the second or third place. But yeah. If you want that mug, you better get it under 13 hours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to do this, make sure you look at all of the requirements here, because you can't use game exploits. Like, no. I would warp myself into stones and trees and things to fight the bosses. But you can't do that. You have to fight. Nope. You have to do things as they're intended. So take a close look at this. But
you can't get in early iron by clipping into the crypt. Yeah, no, none of that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I definitely could not do this on stream. I'm way too streamer brain distracted when I'm on stream.
No, it's rough.
Yeah, I'd have to just lock my door and tell my wife, nope, don't bother me for the next 13 hours.
I wonder if the no exploits includes the Stagbreaker silver check. Because I've seen some people doing that exploit, and I wonder.
What is the exploit? An
exploit?
Where if you go into the mountains and you take a Stagbreaker and you hit the ground with a Stagbreaker,
I don't think that's an exploit.
You don't think so? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Not really using a bug. It's using
You're just hitting the ground. Yeah. They gave it an area of effect. So.
And it'll say too hard if you're next to either obsidian or silver.
Yeah. Yeah, no. That would definitely be a quicker way to get through that. So Trial of Tear. I'm interested to scroll through the winning entry. I don't know if I can sit there for 13 hours, but... I'd be curious to see how they did it when they finally announced the winner. So that was the Trial of Tear. So we also have some new images to talk about. Here, let me pull it up right here. Right. Is that it? Nope. Oh, here we go. So, Gwen, what do you think about that for authentic Viking gear?
Pass. what?
Well, it's
with the leather crop top.
Well,
what is this?
Well, you know, it's for them.
What is this?
Is it a parachute? What is it?
They have this version, you know, for those late nights.
Wow.
They call this the summer attire. I think it's more of a joke, this version, but
So it looks like the top bit is or it looks a lot like the padded stuff from the planes.
Yeah.
The layer underneath. So let's call it a padded jacket. I'm not sure about all that leather strap business going on at the top.
What about the leather garter belts?
If it has a function, why not? But I see the hood and stuff. It's got a bit of a Robin Hood vibe, doesn't it?
It does. It really does. I was looking at that.
I like these big collars.
Yeah, that's an interesting look. I guess as a sort of face shield against the ash.
Yeah, maybe. It's interesting because they've released like the mage outfits too, and the style's very different. This is more constructed and finely crafted, right? That's what this looks like. Finely crafted. This stuff looks more tattered. Like the mage outfit. Look, it's just kind of tattered.
We've seen it before, haven't we?
Big stitching.
And this is like a punk Kylo Ren outfit.
Yeah. Yeah.
With a bit of panther sleeves going on.
And then the summer version with more skin. And where's the other one? Oh, yeah. The
Dementor version.
Ring Wraith. Yeah.
So you can be a Wraith.
Yeah.
Maybe the Wraiths won't attack you if you're wearing it because they think you're one of their own.
Oh, that's too funny.
But yeah, so very different style if both of these armors are coming with the Ashlands.
Yeah, that doesn't, that doesn't quite fit in the Ashlands. I don't know. It looks more like something you use for the Black Forest. It looks, you know, the color scheme and stuff, it looks very, well, very light. It would make sense because it's too hot in the Ashlands, but I don't know. It looks like a more of a lower tier armor.
You know what? They did mention before that they would be releasing side grades for the different tiers. Mm. So maybe this is an earlier, like maybe Black Forest side grade armor, right?
Has its light armor. That the only biome that doesn't have light armor currently is the plains.
Maybe it's a plains,
So maybe it is a plains light armor.
Because it does that have that padded look.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So interesting.
Because the mage armor is the light armor for the Mislands.
Hmm.
And so I wonder if this is a plains light armor that they're prepping, which I am totally interested in and down for. Like I would love that. I think that would be absolutely delightful. But yeah. So knowing that we're getting this and this is sort of the stage that they're at, what are your theories as to when Ashlands will drop? Do you think we'll get it sooner than we got it in Mislands last year? Or
I'm guessing they're probably aiming for a Christmas release.
Okay, I mean, same. You know,
yeah, I think like logically, that's a bit like marketing wise, it would be the best time to release it before the holidays or early December or something like that to get that that hype while people are you know, a bit more available. I can't imagine them releasing it anytime soon because they just released Hilda's Request. They're still kind of working through bugs and trying to work through some of the crossplay issues that are still ongoing. If they're only starting to design the armor, I reckon there's another good 2 months of development and then all the testing before they release.
Yeah, I know some people were grumbling about how it took them so long to get out of beta with Hilders. And I was like, yeah, but those are different groups of people working on the things. Like, you have people working on Ashlands simultaneously as those working on Hilders. So I don't think that the things that they ran into with Hilders is going to strongly affect the Ashlands release, just because they have a big enough team now that they can work on multiple things at once. And, you know, there's a benefit to that.
Yeah. Well, Gwen, when I finally am able to come up to Europe and we can celebrate Valheim, maybe even during its 1.0 release, we can do like a little convention. That would be awesome. If they're not,
oh my gosh,
if Iron Gate's not going to do one, then we'll have to set one up for the fans.
Uh-huh. Yes.
We can get Smurf Jules to come up, but you know, we have to do some cosplay stuff for Valheim. Absolutely have to do some cosplay stuff. And
I'll take the root armor.
Yeah, that would be a great one to make. I'd love to see a cosplay of that root armor. But I have the perfect costume for Jules to wear, the cosplay costume for Jules. Please make this for him.
I wanted to say it just couldn't come in my undies.
So. Yeah, I thought you were going to tell him to wear the troll armor to match his hat.
No. This is so much better. Oh, yeah. And it's done with the cheapest leather, fake leather.
Yeah, the fake leather.
Beautiful.
And just little brown boxers, that's all you need.
I'd be totally up for it.
This would be amazing.
Amazing. I just realized, I thought that the little collar was part of
the jacket part.
The jacket part, but it looks like it's part of
it's part of the hood, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's even weirder.
I know, right?
How How? Magic.
Yeah. I think it's probably just a Photoshop layer for the pants and the tunic that he turned off for the joke. But yeah,
it absolutely.
It would be funny if they gave us this.
I love this.
This is no since pants crew. About.
Yeah.
No pants, lots of leather. Yep. That sounds like
yeah, add some chains and I'm totally in it.
Oh, chains. That's what we need. I'll message Grimcore after we're done
here. Yes.
Ask him to put some chains on there.
Amazing.
Cool. All right. Well, I think it's that time. For the end of the podcast. It's always sad when we end. We only do this every, two or three weeks now. So,
I miss you guys.
Yeah.
And I need to find my way to the US or have somehow, hopefully this little expose or slideshow of, the trip of Jules visiting entices you both to come and visit, because if you guys come, I'll definitely organize lots of cool Viking related things.
Oh yeah, no, we definitely want to come.
Absolutely. My biggest challenge would be I'd probably have to bring my child.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you mean a challenge? Of course he's invited.
All right, the other challenge would be accessibility, but you know. Yeah. But yeah, if you come here, you'll get to see baby G before he's all grown up. Because at this point, he's up to my waist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I'm standing up,
soon.
He is more than 3 feet tall now.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, let's keep an eye on the games that are coming out. Maybe Minds of Moria will be a new game that we can play together. And then,
well, we had said also, I don't know if we can announce it officially, but we had said that throughout the month of October, which is certainly my favorite month because Halloween, that we would potentially start a playthrough together of 7 Days to Die.
Yeah.
Can I offer an additional alternative?
What's that?
A game that I have found that a lot of Valheim people are really getting into. That is a spooky game, and it's a game I can actually play, is Project Zomboid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I have heard of this. Mm-hmm.
And it's got a lot of crafting. It's got a lot of
base building. It's got a lot of crafting.
It's a lot of crafting.
I tried to set up a dedicated server for that, and alone the configs of the server, it's complicated, but it's nice.
And it has a very brutal death system. It's a legacy death system.
How does that work?
So if you die, it's permadeath.
Mm.
Oh, I don't think I can play this.
If you get bitten by a zombie, that character dies. All the gear is still out in the world. So if you when you die and you start again and it's the new legacy, and you can go out and find your dead body and find your gear or have an established base and do all that stuff. But if you die, it's brutal.
Yeah.
And it's more of a top-down style game. But if we wanted to play something spooky together.
Mm. That could be a fun one. Spooky
because it's very hot, actually. Mm. So,
have heart rate monitors, all of us.
Well, yeah, and if we do 7 Days to Die, I'm sure there'll be plenty of jump scares, because even after this 10 years I've been playing it, I still get caught. Oh, what is that?
I'm so gonna die playing this game. If I had the heart rate monitor, I think people would be calling ambulances. I
can't play like that. Cool. All right, well, Gwen and I we'll try to work on those dates for 7 Days to Die, and that's gonna do it for this week. Thanks for joining me, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
That's it for now. Have fun out there.
I'm out there.
Bye-bye. Bye.